How's it going? And welcome back to On the Wire, a proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. And if you're listening on a platform that allows reading and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe, and as always, I am joined by the 2020 TGFBI champion, Kevin Hastings. Hey, Kevin, we are a month into the season, and if this was 2020, you'd be halfway to your championship. How's it looking with 5 months left to go on the season?
Thank you, Adam. It's a good thing we are not halfway through this season. Things are improving, though, and I did not take a 97-mile-per-hour pitch to the face this week, so I'm calling that good. Things are getting better. We're starting to climb.
Nice. That's all you can ask for at this point in the 162 season, if you will, is just grind. It's a grind. And we knew that going in. And I think that a lot of talk either on Twitter or just by looking at fab bids might have made you think otherwise. Just the aggressiveness of the bids that we've seen in the first month of the season. And it started to calm down. It started like last week. You noticed each week in TGFBI and in the main event, you've noticed the money slowing down as you see the spending go down. And maybe that's because the people who are willing to spend already spent all their money. Maybe. And nobody else has changed their tactic. Or maybe people are just starting to realize, hey, we've got 5 more months that I've got to spend all this money. I need to save some for September. Who knows? But we'll see if those trends continue. I have a feeling that it's going to plateau in about 2 or 3 weeks, and we're just going to see a steady amount of money being spent on your regular targets each week. All right. Luckily, today we have with us someone else who's experienced success in the shortened season and is going to help us navigate through the transition back to 162 games. Mika Henry is with us. And of course, Mika finished second overall in the 2020 TGFBI. Mika can and should be followed on Twitter at FantasyCentral1, the number one. You can find a link in the show description here in the podcast, and can be found contributing to New Life Fantasy, Roto Ranks, and Fantrax, as well as co-hosting a Fantasy Insiders podcast. So make sure to give him a listen over there after listening to his insights here. Mika, thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm in good spirits. It's been a long last few months with school and stuff, but I'm in good spirits right now. Ready to talk some baseball.
That's what we're talking here for. Baseball fixes everything.
There you go. Mm-hmm. All right. I can't get over the fact that we talked right before we recorded, and you mentioned it just now, you just finished up your semester of school, and there's a big part of me that wishes that was still the case for me. It's been a hot minute since I could say that, and I miss a lot of that aspect of it. Hopefully you're enjoying it, even though it sounds like there's definitely a level of stress in what you're going through right now.
A high level, but it's almost over. We're almost over. I think it's few more semesters and I'll finally be able to just settle into the real adult world, finally.
All right, we're going to get into some baseball talk now. We'll jump into our news and notes of the week section. And as always, I'm just going to bounce these guys off of you guys and get your guys' take on them as we go. Kevin, first and foremost, Dalton Varsho was recalled to take Cole Calhoun's roster spot after he was placed in the IL after having hamstring surgery to repair his hamstring and remove a tendon, which sounds a lot worse, hopefully, than it actually is. I feel like you always need all of your tendons, but apparently there's some that are just you could just throw out. But anyway, with his catcher eligibility, Varsho was a high draft pick in many early drafts and early draft season, myself included, unfortunately. But now that he's back, should he be considered for pickups this weekend where he was dropped?
I saw a couple of tweets in the last couple of days or day or so that are relevant here for sure. One regarding Cole Calhoun, someone with knowledge of medical procedures said that it does sound much worse than it actually is, as you alluded to, and that 3 to 4 weeks he should be on the mend. So yeah, it's not as bad as it sounds for Cole Calhoun. Like you said, that sounds absolutely horrendous. And then Vlad Sedler, I think he hit the nail on the head today. Varsho hasn't played yet. He's not in the lineup tonight either. I was just checking as we're recording here late Saturday evening, and LeCastro is playing at the alternate site this weekend. So is, Christian Walker. I almost drew a blank on Christian Walker. That'd have been horrible. And
Smith has just been destroying the ball. We don't really don't think about
right. him. And with Walker and LeCastro coming back, Varsho hasn't played since he got called up. I agree with Vlad's tweet. Let everybody else spend their money.
Yeah, it seems like the same thing is happening to Varsho that happened to him last year when he got the call up. He was just called up to end up being depth on the bench. He didn't play at all last year until Starling Marte got traded to Miami, and then he finally got put in. And that seems something very similar is happening with him, at least in the early going of this call up. That catcher eligibility is tempting, but if you're not actually putting up numbers, you're just taking a zero regardless. Something to monitor, but yeah, I think I'm in agreement on that one. Micah, George Springer returned to the Blue Jays at what seems to be at the expense of Rowdy Tellez, who was optioned to the alt site to make room. Should we expect Tellez to show up on the most drop list this weekend, or do you still have faith he'll find adequate playing time in Dunedin? I always like to repeat the fact that it is pronounced Dunedin for those listening.
Dunedin, interesting. I would not have guessed that's how it's pronounced. But yeah, Tellez, because Teoscar's back, Springer's back now. He was only getting most of his play at DH. So now that Springer's at DH, there's really not any space for him to see regular playing time. If it's like a deeper league where you have to drop somebody, he has to be the guy that you drop.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if I see him on a lot of on the higher end of the drop list when you look that up on NFBC this coming week. Mm-hmm. And then I won't be surprised if he's picked right back up the week after when he gets called back up for some other reason, because injuries continue to happen and depth is very important, at least in the early going of 2021 for sure. Mm. For the record, the only reason I know how to pronounce Dunedin is because I lived there for a year back in 2006. Nice. So I have inside knowledge on the pronunciation of the town. All right, Kevin, sticking with the Blue Jays, Tanner Roark was DFA'd by the Blue Jays and Nate Pearson returned from the IL, but he was sent to the alternate site. So my question to you is, who is left in the Blue Jays rotation?
My hope, and gosh, going back to draft season prior to everything getting shut down for 2020, I was really big on Trent Thornton coming into last season. Probably had him on as many of my teams as any other player. He may have been my most rostered player as we were getting set in February and March. And he's been pitching in relief. He only had the 5 innings last year and then was injured and missed the entire season. So far this season, he's been pitching in relief, multiple innings in each outing. I think 2 1/3 is the most he's pitched. However, I foresaw him all along at some point this season working his way into the rotation. This may speed that up. Now, he's not going to come out there and go 6 or 7 innings and throw 90 pitches his first time out, but I could see him 4 innings or so. What's typical when these guys get their first start after relieving for 2 or 3 innings at a time, usually 75 pitches. I could see that for a time or two, and then him working his way into the rotation. Who they're hopeful is only going to miss 1 start still, last I saw. But I like Thornton. He did give up 2 earned runs in his last outing, both solo home runs. That's a bit concerning, but he's looked pretty good so far on the season, almost, or an ERA right at 3, and that's including those 2 home runs in his last outing. So I'm hopeful that it's going to be Trent Thornton, and he's the type of guy that is basically free, $1 or $2 in a $1,000 fab league right now. If you have the spot, it's getting tight this time of year. There's been so many injuries, but he's the type of guy, if you have the spot, you can let him sit there for a while. And he has some value because he gets multiple innings when he does relieve. Anyway, it may not just be a complete stash. You may be able to use him as your 6th or 7th starter, depending on how many relievers that you're trying to get saves from are out there. So Trent Thornton is who I'm hoping, and I think he does have a path.
Yeah, Blue Jays using him today as we're recording this. It's about almost 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, and Thornton is just finished up the 5th inning. So he's at 1 2/3 so far. He has given up a home run, has 4 strikeouts, though. 4 out of those 5 outs came by way of strikeout. This is a bullpen game for the Blue Jays. I knew that going in. Travis Burgeon came in as a left-handed pitcher to start, as strictly as an opener. Only went one inning. So if he's listed on a rotation list like he is on roster resource, that's just because he literally started the game today. So I wouldn't read too much into that. Tommy Malone pitched 2 1/3. Forgettable baseball as well earlier in the game. Thornton's a good call out there. And it was just really interesting to look on the roster resource page for the Blue Jays and just see two guys, Steven Matz, Robbie Ray, the only guys listed exactly in their rotation with a whole bunch of question marks after that. All right. With the minor league season about to be underway, we've seen a bunch of assignments announced. Some notable ones. I noticed Wander Franco being sent to AAA to start the season. Bobby Witt Jr. for the Royals in AA. Same as Riley Green for the Tigers, AA. Spencer Torkelson is starting in high A ball, which is slightly surprising, at least in my opinion. Did you notice any other assignments that stood out to you in either direction?
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about the Franco one. That's interesting for redraft. Because, I mean, maybe I'm mistaken about, did he ever go to AA?
No, he was not. He never made it to AA. He finished 2019 in high A ball.
Yeah, so the fact that he just completely skipped over AA tells me that they're like, all right, we already know he's like almost MLB-ready bat, but now it's like almost like they indirectly confirmed it to us. At this point, there's a good chance we see Franco in like maybe late August, late July type time. I'd stash him if you had the space.
Yeah, I know. I've seen Franco was drafted in a bunch of the leagues I played in this year. He's also been dropped in a bunch of the leagues I played in this year, mm-hmm. just because for fear of Tampa Bay playing time games and, of course, not calling him up. I agree. I think that AAA placement for him was interesting since he just skipping AA altogether. I know a lot of people will say that the jump from high A to AA is the biggest jump a hitter can make because the pitching just goes up tremendously. Go AAA is kind of knocking on the door, if you will. I don't see Franco's not coming up until at the very least after the Super 2, which is not a hard date per se, sometime in July. But I still stand by my opinion that Taylor Walls might get more playing time as a infield prospect for the Rays than Franco will this year. And this I roster Franco in at least one of my dynasty leagues. So I'm chopping at the bit for him to come up. Don't get me wrong. I'm having a hard time seeing it, but we'll have to see what we see. Kevin, did you notice any other assignments out there that kind of stood out to you, that somebody that you might be keeping your eye on?
Not really, because I think different organizations have different philosophies of how they want to do this. So I wasn't really surprised by any of them. For example, Dayton Moore has talked about, for his hitters, he thinks it's the bigger challenge is AA. He thinks they see more velocity at AA than at AAA. They might see more movement on pitches at AAA, but he thinks they see more velocity at AA with more up and coming young arms. So I'm not surprised at all with Bobby Witt Jr. beginning there. Franco at AAA for Tampa. They may have a completely different reason. That's where they want to start him. I really don't read a whole lot into when we may see them at the major league level based on where they're placed, especially these guys without last season. These guys, very few exceptions, these guys haven't seen anything above rookie ball, most of these guys. So it's just, I'm excited to start hooking up my minor league TV subscription and start seeing these guys get some at-bats, regardless of where they're at.
That'd be nice. A couple other ones. I mean, out in Seattle, Jared Kelenic and Logan Gilbert got assigned to AAA as well. Two guys I think we expect to see up in Seattle in short order. So I know I'm stashing both in different leagues myself. All right, Kevin, sticking with you, and we'll go to Kansas City. Chris Bubik is now back in Kansas City, called up from the alt site. Should we be looking at him this weekend for FABBIBS where he's available?
I don't think so. I think their rotation is still pretty well set. I know Brad Keller has had some issues this season, but with Duffy was amazing again today. Brady Singer seems to be okay. I think that might have been the kind of catalyst to this call, just in case. But I think they're looking at this as bullpen depth, although he did start for them last season. I think for right now, with Duffy, Minor, Keller, and Springer. I think they're looking at bullpen depth here. Of course, if something were to happen, if Springer's heel doesn't heal as quickly as they anticipate, or if anybody else needs to miss a start for any reason, Bubik would be the guy. But I think for right now, it's bullpen depth.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it also makes sense that he gets called up when he does with the minor season starting back up. Guy like that who I believe he didn't see anything higher than high A ball himself before getting called up last year for the Royals, to not even bother getting an assignment when minor league season's about to come out and just bring him right back up to the major league team. So it wasn't too surprising, the timing of that as well. Mika, we had a couple of injuries yesterday, or Friday, excuse me. Wilson Contreras and Jesse Winker left their respective games a little early for various reasons. They're both out of their lineups today. Of course, Winker missing some time earlier in the season. Are you worried about either one of these guys, or are you just taking it day by day? Are you going to make any moves in Fab this weekend to back them up where you do have them?
Contreras, I don't know what happened with him, but I do know Jesse Winker has the back tightness, and that's like a thing that's been come from back from past seasons. So that's a little concerning, because backs are tricky. But I'm confident that we'll be able to avoid an IO list for him, but an IO stint for him. But backs are tricky. You just never know how long they'll linger, how long he'll be out for. So definitely a guy to watch. Definitely a guy to monitor for now.
Yeah, Contreras was left with an issue with his thigh. He is day to day. Like I said, he's out of the lineup today. We'll see if he gets back in on Sunday, which obviously will make people feel a little bit at ease with their catcher situation. So I think the majority of people don't like carrying three catchers in a two-catcher league if they can avoid it. But if you're going to have to, Contreras is not somebody you're going to drop just to stream a guy, especially if he's just day-to-day.
Same with Winker too. Don't drop Winker, guys. He was raking. The tightness might be coming and going all season, but when he's healthy, you want him in your lineup.
All right, and sticking with catchers at least, Kevin, Joey Barr is traveling with the Giants to, quote, spend time with Posey and Casale, as Gabe Kapler put it. Is Bart worth a stash at this point?
I really don't think so. He's great to have in dynasty leagues right now, and depending on what your roster situation is, even in keeper leagues. But I don't roster any more catchers than are in my starting lineup, unless it's a dynasty league. And I won't make an exception for Bart, especially with as well as Casale has done with the staff and the resurgence Posey is having at the plate. I think everything got set back a year, and it wasn't COVID. It was his injury during the Arizona Fall League at the end of 2019. Bart broke his thumb, I believe it was, and that set him back an entire year. I think they want him to come up when Posey is there and play with Posey, and then transfer Posey to first base over time and him start taking more and more time at catcher. I think that's always been the plan, and I don't see it happening this season.
I do wonder what Posey's long-term outlook looks like. I believe he is in the last year of his contract with the Giants. So I am curious to see where he might stand, especially with this resurgence happening this year, if this is a playing for a new contract type of play or playing himself into the sunset type of play, and if he's just an early retirement type of player. I have no insight into that whatsoever. This is completely just, you know, conjecture. But it'd be I'm interested to see how he plays out the remainder of his career. All right. Last thing on my notes here, because Logan Allen was removed from Cleveland's rotation and has been announced Sam Henches is coming in to the rotation to replace him, which keeps Cal Quantrill in the bullpen for long relief. Do you have any interest in Henches going into next week? I believe he would be slated either for a Tuesday or Wednesday start. So it would just be a single start, spot start.
If I'm desperate for a streamer or desperate for some innings pitch, I might take a flyer if I like the matchup enough. He's a Cleveland's prospect, so he's a guy that could be good. So we'll see what happens. You know, who knows? They just seem to...
This doesn't have to be hard.
They just seem to find guys out of nowhere. You never know. And this is a guy that had poor control in the minor leagues, and now he has zero walks over 5.2 inning pitch this season. He's given up 3 home runs, but he has no walks. So if he's improved his command slightly, there might be something here. You never know.
Yeah, I question how many innings he might go in his first start. So he might be a guy that if you're really trying to vulture wins or win opportunities, you might want to see where their bullpen is at come the day that he is set to start and who might be the first guy up after, say, the third or fourth inning. Hey, he might go 5. He might just go an even 5 if he can keep those walks down like you mentioned and you qualify for the win. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. But man, yeah, to echo what you said, Cleveland does magical things.
I don't know how they do it.
Logan Allen, though. With Logan Allen.
Yeah, not with Logan. Maybe not yet. That guy doesn't have overpowering stuff, but he's a competitor up there on the mound.
Yeah, that's true. And hopefully his doppelganger, the other Logan Allen that they drafted last year, will have the same mentality. That's the boggles my mind, is the fact that Cleveland traded for Logan Allen and drafted a different Logan Allen in the same year. And I hope that they're in the majors at the same time at some point in the next couple of years.
I just hope they didn't make the same mistake a lot of us have made in waiver wire ads at one point or another.
Oh, I got that one. Oh, wait,
that's the wrong one. We got to get the other one.
I had so many people talk to me about how they picked up Sal Romano instead of Jordan Romano after week one, after Kirby Yeats went down. There's a lot more money spent on Sal Romano than I thought there should be. Oh, that's why. All right, that's going to do it for our news and notes this week. As always, I'm sure we missed some stuff. We try to keep our news and notes fab oriented. So if there's more interesting stuff that we didn't talk about, you can definitely listen to a different podcast, which I highly recommend listening to First Pitch, the about 15-minute podcast put out by Nick Pollock and Alex Fass on the weekends here at Pitcher List. And you'll be up to date with everything important that happens throughout the course of every single day. All right. So today, like I said, we are lucky to have Mika Henry with us, who did finish second right behind our own Kevin Hastings in TGFBI last year. It was both Mika and Kevin's first year in TGFBI, and he came out swinging. Good job, guys. But what I'm curious to know, Mika, from you is, first I want to do is I want to break down how you spent your fab in TGFBI versus Kevin, how you spent your fab in that same year. You guys finished back to back. And I'm curious to see if you guys utilized different strategies, if you targeted different kind of players based on what your draft was. And you don't have to go into very specifics, what have you, but you can start with you first. What was your overall feel for how you attacked fab in the shortened two plus month season versus what we have going on? And we'll get into a little bit later the adjustments you're making for this year, but how did you attack fab in TGFBI last year during the shortened season?
Yeah, so just for some background for the listeners, I didn't join actual fab leagues until 2020. So this was my first time doing actual fab. I didn't know what I was doing. So I had to go on Twitter, see a lot of Vlad Sedler, see what he was doing, what he's coming up with, with his fab articles and stuff like that. Just to see what people were doing, see different type of strategies and stuff like that. Eventually, I just figured that it's a 60-game season, so you just not have to like really wait a long time. You can be aggressive, but still be like moderate. I made sure I got guys that I needed. I think I got Rafael Montero for maybe like $100-something. And then towards the end of the season, I had a few hundred left and I kind of just spent it all on all these guys and just dominated the last couple of weeks and finished second somehow. Yes. So I don't know how it happened.
And you were closing fast, by the way.
I think I was speed up a little bit because I had guys like Jared Walsh. I think I had Cabrian Hayes. So all these guys that were like breaking out basically, but it was a shortened season, so they were finished abruptly, but yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds like you at least found a way, even though you were a little bit more aggressive than maybe you would be in a longer season, you still found a way to spread out your money so that you were able to make moves throughout the year, throughout the two-month period, rather than splurging on guys early and hoping that they'd be in your lineup all season, which I know is a whole different strategy to go with. And there's lots to be said about that, spending a lot of money on guys early, because they're going to help you all year. When the shortened season, you get the same amount of money. That was the best part. Be like, yep, you're still going to get $1,000, but you have to find a way to spend it all in 2 months rather than 6. Kevin, did you see yourself, and we've talked a little bit about this in previous podcasts, but did you see yourself spending your fab differently in 2020 than you had in previous fab leagues prior to the shortened season?
Yeah, I made bigger bids earlier in the season. I still had the same philosophy of having money left at the end, but I wasn't thinking of it as percentages. I was thinking of it as the same dollar amounts. I still wanted $20 or $30 left the last week or two just to fill my holes. In a week or two, finding an upgrade isn't really going to help you a lot, but filling in where you would take a zero can help a lot. So it wasn't about upgrading players. It was just making sure I had money left in case I had any injuries or in case guys got sent down, whatever, which meant I had more money on a weekly basis to spend earlier. Unfortunately, I blew $200 of it right out of the gate. When it was funny, I drafted Buster Posey before he opted out. Didn't draft a backup catcher, as I mentioned earlier. So I had my two catchers, needed one, and went 212, something like that, on Kiner Falefa, who was going to start in the infield and steal bases, qualified at catcher. He started really slow. I dropped him a week later before he started picking up. So my aggressiveness right away was gone and out the window, but it stayed that way. I also grabbed Montero early, which was great. My two main closers that I drafted on nearly every team I had, they both stunk. It was Wade Davis and Hansel Robles were my two closers in almost every league. Waiting, but not completely punting it. Fortunately, I drafted Trevor Rosenthal, and then picking up Montero, I had two closers. That worked out. And yeah, probably sticking with that, it worked out to where you had about $100 a week to spend if you were only saving 20 or 30 for the last couple of weeks. And I spent it.
Yeah. And then in the shortened season, you said early that you quote unquote wasted $200 on Falefa. It's not a big deal since over the course of just 2 months, if you really translate that into a 6 month season, you would have only spent, say, something around $60 or $70. And so that $200 goes a lot further in that shortened season and doesn't make as much of a dent, of course. So Mika, talk to me about adjustments that you, like you said, it was your first experience in a fab league, as you have most of your experience comes in points leagues in 2020. So going into the full season of the 2021 season, what mental adjustments did you tell yourself you needed to make, or what adjustments have you been making as we're a month into the season, knowing that we still have 5 months to go?
Honestly, just trying to be conservative with my money. I don't want to be at like $600 by the end of April or something like that. I want to have a good amount of money left. And I had Nico Horner, Alex Kirilloff on my bench. I didn't really want to drop them, so I didn't have any reason to spend as much as I could have if I had guys that I could drop. It's worked out well to put me in a position to save money. I'm just in that mode right now, just only grabbing guys that I absolutely have to grab and just saving the rest of the money.
Now, are you making moves every week, or are you just finding ways to, like, you know what, I'm happy with my roster and I don't feel the necessity to even make like dollar bids or $2 bids or anything like that?
Yep, exactly. I think I've done that twice now. I haven't done a bid. And once was because I forgot, but the other times it was intentional. I didn't want to. I was like, let me just chill out this week.
Yeah, we talked about this last week. It's, for me, it's more so the fact that I have leagues on like four different platforms. And so there's definitely at least one of those teams where I forget to put in bids. Mm-hmm. I like to bring that up now on every podcast because it just helps me remember. It's more of like, oh yeah, I need to put, as soon as we're done recording, I got to start putting bids in now. Especially since Kevin and I share a team where our bids actually are due on Saturday night instead of Sunday mm-hmm. night. So that's the one that we typically forget about, but that's okay. It happens to the best of us. I noticed, yeah, Mika, you've only spent about $56 of your fab so far this year. So you're right, you know, same kind of conservative talk that you're talking about and that Kevin and I have talked about in previous episodes as well. I believe, Kevin, you're still under $100, if I'm not mistaken. I know I'm under $100 spent on the season as well. So me personally, I do making moves every single week. Even if they are just like a dollar or $2 bids, sometimes it is just churning out a different stash. All right, this stash, I stash him for 2 or 3 weeks. He's not coming into his own. He's not turning into anything for me. So I'm going to just try to stash somebody else. And then sometimes it's a two-star pitcher, which that's a whole nother can of worms that we'll get into a little bit later, whether that's a good strategy or a bad strategy. Who knows? Some people know. And just by the experience you get by having an Austin Gomber on your team or Joe Ross on your team for those two start weeks. But I digress. Kevin, have you noticed any, do you think that you just went right back to your, say, your 2019 strategy? Or did you, have you found yourself having to force yourself back into that role knowing that it's 162 game season compared to last year? Or have you made any other different adjustments?
No, I think the thing I wanted to carry over the most from 2020 to 2021 wasn't necessarily the ads, but the drops. I that was so easy in 2020. Oh, there's only 4 weeks left in the season. Even though we're only a little over halfway through it, I can drop this guy. I've tried to continue to do that. Not necessarily spending more money. Obviously, that's spread over 27 weeks, counting the fab period we had before the season started. So I'm not spending more. It's more speculative bids and trying to get a couple, 3 weeks out in front of the expensive guys. And it's luck a lot of times, especially like you said, you're churning the stashes a little bit. So it takes a little luck getting the right one in there. So I'm not spending as aggressively in dollar amounts, but I am continuing to be aggressive with my drops and making sure that I have a purpose for every guy on the roster. If I'm not starting them this week, what's the scenario where I might next week? And if I can't come up with one, then there's no reason for him to be on my roster. I should add somebody where, even if it's a long shot, I have a scenario in my mind where I will put him in my starting lineup.
That's good. I really like that. It kind of sums up that strategy, just having a plan for every player on your roster. That's good. I like that, Kevin. All right, let's get to the meat of the podcast, and that is making those suggestions to those who are listening, those who haven't started making their adjustments on their fab bids yet, or are looking for some guidance into the ones that they might be looking for moving forward. So as always, we typically put these players into different categories, statistical categories, and we'll start off with our power guys. I'm going to throw out a really deep one first. And then Kevin, I know you have one listed on here. It's probably more of a 12 teamer. And the one I'm going to start off with is, I just want everybody to keep an eye on Daniel Vogelbach. I think we mentioned him a little bit last week, but he is still 0% rostered in TGFBI and only 1% rostered in Yahoo, which caters obviously to more 12 teamers. Guys, don't look now, but Keston Hiura hasn't started the last 4 games for the Brewers, and Vogelbach has. He's also batting second. He's not doing much with that time, per se. And I haven't seen if he's done anything tonight so far. But when he is doing stuff, he is hitting the ball really hard. Milwaukee does have a 7-game slate next week, 4 at Philly and 3 at Miami. He may end up only facing one lefty during that entire road trip in Trevor Rogers in Miami. So if this is an elongated period of time that Keston Hiura is going to miss, looks like Vogelbach obviously is going to get the bulk, if not all of the playing time over at first base for the Brewers. Does this interest you guys, either one of you guys at all, to somebody worth taking a look at? Or even if you bring in Vogelbach, like to your point, Kevin, is this a guy who's actually going to play on a typical roster, or just a roster that is completely desperate for a corner infield spot? What do you think?
Oh yeah, I'd use him in a corner if I'm in a tough spot. There's a lot of injuries out there right now, and depending on the league and the team, if they're building up all on one team, there could be worse options than having Vogelbach at a corner. He could easily hit 3 or 4 home runs in a week. He hasn't done it yet, but it's somebody with that upside that is less than 0 chance of that happening.
Yeah, I guess the question is too, is just how much time or how long are the Brewers going to hold Hiura down on the bench as he tries to obviously figure out what's going on with his production. Mika, is Vogelbach somebody that you might have your eye on for this, for basically just the fact that he's getting all this playing time at the top of the Brewers order?
Yeah, that's a nice lineup to be in. It would be a lot better if Yelich was healthy, but it's a nice lineup to be in. And if we know that Vogelbach has massive power upside. I think I dove into his profile earlier this offseason. He just doesn't swing as much as he could. I basically said maybe he's just being lazy. I don't want to say that what type of word, but he's a big power guy. It takes a lot of walks. I feel like he could swing more, but he doesn't swing more. But if he's healthy and he's starting and he's hitting the ball hard, yeah, if you need some home runs, I think he could be a solid piece for you.
And that the Brewers do have 7 games this week as well.
Yeah, all on the road. And so, unfortunately, it would be even nicer if they were traveling to an American League park. But unfortunately, they are staying in the National League. But still, if he's getting that playing time, that is definitely a power option out there that I think you could probably get on the cheap for sure. I'm thinking definitely not triple digits, probably somewhere closer to less than 5% of your remaining budget. All right, Kevin, you had another guy who's still available in a few 15 teamers, but I guess majority of 12 teamers. Who are you looking at?
Yeah, this really answered a question I briefly brought up last week, and we thought we knew the answer, and it was confirmed. What is St. Louis going to do with Matt Carpenter? At the time, as we were recording last week, they had been sending him out there day after day, and he was hitting like 060 or something like that at that point. I don't think he played at all this week. Tyler O'Neill is the guy moving Edmund to second base, and he responded. He had a great week. 4 home runs this week, 2 stolen bases. We've always known he was fast, but he didn't steal bases. In fact, I think Toby brought up at this time last week, he was 0-2 so far this season. Well, he was successful twice this season. In addition to the 2 home runs, he has 5 home runs and 56 at bats, I believe. That's a lot of home runs over a full season.
And 4 of
them, I'm not going to prorate it out, but that comes out to a lot more home runs than he is actually going to hit. And we've known this, that he had this power. If he's going to get this opportunity, they're another team that has 7 games this week, I believe. And yeah, I just don't see Matt Carpenter getting back in that lineup. And so if Tommy Edman's playing second base and Tyler O'Neill is healthy, it's been not just the shortened season last year. We've been waiting for him to get an opportunity for 2 or 3 seasons, and he's taking advantage of it.
And coming back from the IL, he's hit 4 of those 5 home runs. The other home run, of course, came on opening day for the Cardinals, and he stole his second base yesterday with a nice little combo meal home run, stolen base combination on Friday as well. Mika, is Tyler O'Neill somebody that interests you, or I know that there's a whole camp of people that kind of sit out there and say Tyler O'Neill is more, he's a 3 true outcome kind of guy, and I'm not going to bother with the strikeout potential. Sooner or later, he's going to catch up to him. Are you in that camp, or are you buying what he's been putting on the field as of late?
I'm like somewhere right in between. I'm somewhere right between he's going to be in that camp and he was going to be just mashing and doing his thing. Because he doesn't have the best contact skills. He just doesn't. I don't know if that's going to improve, but if it does, I think he can hit for a solid average. But if it doesn't, he might have these stretches where he goes crazy, then he just craters down. But right now, if he's getting the opportunity and he's hitting and he's stealing, like Kevin said, that's a valuable that's what you want, those 4 or 5 category assets. And yeah, if you need home runs or stolen bases, I'd say definitely go get them.
And O'Neill, of course, is, like Kevin said, playing every day since coming back from the IL. I believe he missed the very first day he was eligible, but he has played every game since. And sometimes playing time is the only thing you really care about. You just need a warm body out there. So in the, I think, 19% of TGFBI leagues that he's available, I expect him to get scooped up, especially with his recent production. And in those leagues where he's available, especially since he's in the outfield and he's playing every day in a 15 teamer, I would expect him to go for triple digits. Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think last week, I know there's more than one league. Like last week, Kirillov was only available in one league. It was the league I am in, and I didn't come close. I think Tyler O'Neill is available in my league this week as well. As usual, as we've talked each and every week, I'm going to put a bid in, but I don't expect to get him.
How much did Kirillov go for? Do you remember?
I don't. I can look real quick as we move along, and I'll bring it up here in a moment.
Because I expect that O'Neill will probably go for a similar amount, maybe a slightly less than what Kirilov went for last week, just based on the fact that it's the same league with the same needs. But we'll see.
Kirilov only went for 131 last week in that league.
So I could see in that league, at least that's very specifically based on that history, that very small history of one guy. Tyler O'Neill could probably break triple digits based on need in that league. One other guy I want to talk to you guys about or get your opinion on is Andrew Vaughn for the White Sox. Of course, hasn't been playing nearly as much as everybody would like him to play, except for Tony La Russa. And he's been quietly dropped over the course of the last couple of weeks in various leagues. I'm curious, Micah, if he gets, has he been dropped in your leagues? And if he hasn't, if you see him being dropped, is this a guy that you're going to jump right back in the following week?
Yeah, I haven't seen him dropped in any of my leagues, but if I see him out there and I'm that's one of those guys, I'm like, my eyes lit up, I'm light up. I'm like, I need some Andrew Vaughn because he can rake. He's just a natural hitter. And the playing time is a concern as 5-game week this week, too, with no DH at Cincinnati. That might squeeze in for playing time. But with Eloy out till who knows when, if he just keeps hitting, and I think he's on the 5-4 game hitting streak, something like that. So he's been hitting well lately. So if he just keeps hitting well, they got to keep him in the lineup somehow, some way.
Kevin, is this the guy that you think you'd be willing to stash if you've got the room, if he gets dropped in any of your leagues?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm definitely holding on to him in the leagues where I do have him. He has started to play a little bit more just over the past couple of days after a few days off. And as Micah said, he had a nice 5-game hitting streak and then had a 3-for-4 day with 2 doubles. So he's actually performing better than the narrative as well. I know even when he wasn't hitting, he was taking some walks. I think, I don't have it in front of me, but I believe his OBP is like 365. That was yesterday at some point. So he is getting on base. He is performing. He wasn't the story that Mercedes was, but we know who this guy's going to be. He's going to be a hitter in the middle of their lineup for a long time and probably more consistently fairly soon this season.
Yeah, Vaughn was dropped in a couple of main event leagues back on the 18th and picked back up on the 25th. The max bid of 127, min bid of 57. So those two bids. So he'll definitely get picked up if he's dropped. It's just a matter of how much the other maybe 14 teams in the league might interest picking him back up for. But it sounds like we're all in agreement that Vaughn is definitely worth, if you only got one or two stash spots on your bench, that he's worth holding on to in that role, as Kevin alluded to before. Make sure everybody has a role. And if Vaughn continues to see a little bit more playing time, chipping away at that, as Kevin, your notes here say that the White Sox only have a 5-game, they only have a 5-game week next week. So not a good chance that he sees extra playing time that way, especially going into Cincinnati for two of those as well. All right, we'll move on. Mika, right. Is there any?
Yeah, no DH for him the first half of the week. So NFBC leagues, they're going to be without a DH until Friday.
I'm just hoping Mercedes in a Yahoo league. And so I'm just hoping that he plays first base for those two games in Cincinnati and gets that much closer to gaining an actual position eligibility. In Yahoo, of course, you only need 5 games started at a position to get that new eligibility. So I got my fingers crossed on that one.
I could see them giving him one start, but they're not going to sit Jose Abreu for 4 straight days, are they?
No, probably not.
For him to start both of them, Abreu would have 4 days off. So I could see them giving Abreu one day off possibly to get him in the lineup. Tell him, hey, you get three out of 4 days off, rest up. It's a long season. But that's what I was looking at. Between Vaughn's been playing mostly left field, but then with Mercedes and Abreu, it's going to be tough. Like I can't play Abreu this week because it's a real in NFBC. We're,
at least
we're
the first half of the week.
It is a very real possibility he gets one game in that first four day period. So if I have Abreu on my team, I'm sitting him for the first half of this week. That it's going to be tough for the White Sox.
Hey, if they want to put him behind the plate, Mercedes, instead of first, I'm okay with that.
There you go. That's what we really
want. That is his position. We'll move on to the speed section, then the speedsters. Usually you can find a couple of these guys laying around, and usually they're a little bit one-dimensional. I put out an article every week over at Pitcherless. It comes out on Saturdays. It's called Need for Speed. And so the guys that I was looking at this week, to stream this week, just strictly for stolen bases, the aforementioned Nico Horner, Mika, you talked about earlier, he is pretty much, I think he's available in one league in TGFBI, but he is widely available in 12 teamers on Yahoo, 17% rostered. Michael Taylor is still available in more than 20% of leagues on Yahoo. Again, only available in one league in TGFBI. But both these guys, Nico Horner and Michael Taylor, Cubs rank 6th in stolen base opportunities taken in the league, and where Kansas City does rank 2nd, which is really no surprise based on their history. And so these are guys that I was looking at. They have some pretty good matchups coming moving forward. And Nico Horner, I think, is a lot faster than people give him credit for. We talked about him a little bit last week as well. His first to home speed, or home to first speed, 4.24 seconds, ranks him 16th in baseball so far this season in the shortened period that he has been up with the Cubs. And he's ranked 24th in sprint speed as well, in line with Manuel Margot, Jazz Chisholm, who we all know, you know, both of those guys can run. And so they've got a pretty good, the Cubs match up against the Dodgers and the Pirates, and Will Smith and Austin Barnes have combined for 14 stolen bases allowed in the first months of the season, which leads all of baseball. And so the Dodgers are letting people run in general. Jacob Stallings ranks 4th with the Pirates in that same category. So good matchup there. The deeper dive that I'm looking at is Elvis Andrews, who's a little bit more available in 15 teamers. And that's mostly just because he really hasn't been doing anything, but he continues to play every single day for the Athletics. And the A's face off against Danny Jansen and Alejandro Kirk and Mike Zunino of the Rays. And all those guys, they have a long history of really not caring too much. I think Zunino finally threw out a runner this past week for the first time this season. Guys that I'm looking at, if I've got an open spot and I want to fill it with something, I'm almost guaranteed to get a counting stat, and that would be stolen bases. These are guys I'm looking at. You guys have any affinity for any of these guys, Mika? Any of these guys stand out? I know you said you're still stashing Horner where you've got him. It might be, if you haven't already, stick them in your lineup for this week. At least that's what I'm thinking. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I love Nico. I've drafted him in TGFBI. I just held him until he made his debut. The guy can hit. He can still hit for batting average. And he has, as you said, he has great speed. He hasn't really had great stolen base numbers per se, but those are probably coming as he gains more experience. But yeah, right now, if you need batting average or speed and a middle infield type guy, definitely get Horner. He won't give you a lot of home runs, but he'll give you everything else.
And Kevin, the Royals guy, of course, Michael Taylor, he's available in one TGFBI league. Please tell me that one is not your one league as well, because it seems like all the decent outfielders that you can find are available in your league.
No, I don't believe it is. All right. You know, Nico Horner also had a great game today. 3 for 3 again, second stolen base of the season. Anywhere he is available, this might be the last weekend you have a chance to add him to your roster.
Yeah, and then John Birdie was dropped in 2 TGFBI leagues. He's available in 15% of Yahoo leagues. He's always a speed option. He should gain third base eligibility today, as he's made his 10th straight start at the Keystone. Or sorry, at the Hot Corner. And so definitely to keep an eye out there. He was, like I said, he was dropped in 2 leagues. I'd expect him, especially with the added playing time, to get picked up this week as well. And I think maybe for a little bit more money than more fab dollars than people really want to spend on John Birdie. But again, with the 3 position eligibility and the added playing time, he's obviously a threat to steal bases in Miami, who also like to run. I expect him to get picked up for a decent dollar amount where he is available. Either one of you guys have had your eye on any other speedster that either might have been dropped in one of your leagues surprisingly or is just generally available?
I will say, if you can stomach the batting average and Akil Badu's available and it's like a deeper league, I say take a flyer on him if you really need some speed. He's not going to hit for average, but he will steal and he will hit home runs. So if you need some really cheap speedings out there, I'd say see what happens.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised to have seen Badu being spots. Yeah, I think we're saying the same thing. Yeah, he was dropped in a couple places, and I think a lot of that has to do with probably just the playing time being chipped away a little bit. But the thing with Badu is that he's a Rule 5 pick. He's not being sent down anywhere. He's not going to be sent back, especially with the way he started the season. And so he will be out there. He just won't. He might not play seven games when the Tigers have a seven game stretch. He still has that opportunity because he's not getting sent down.
Yeah, another guy we mentioned briefly earlier, and I brought him up in this actual segment last week, but I think he's still available in some spots, and that he didn't make it back midweek this week. Some were hoping, but LeCastro is available in some leagues, and I do not see any reason that he is not right back in the leadoff spot when he is back.
Yeah, another guy that even if he doesn't get back in the first half of the week, definitely that's somebody worth holding on to in one of those stash, those unofficial staff positions on your roster, because you know how you will use him once he is available. Throw him right in there, especially for the second half of next week, when I believe Arizona does have the full 3-day weekend, everybody else that call out.
I think I'm stashing in TGFBI. I think I'm stashing LeCastro. Yeah, I definitely am. He's just sitting on my bench.
Continue to do that.
Yeah. And I was thinking about dropping him. I've been thinking about it. I guess I'll just hold him. I'll just hold it out.
One more week.
I'll get one more week.
Yeah, I know a lot of people. There's a couple of people that told me, you know, I think Toby said it last week, that they don't like streaming stolen bases early in the season. They'd rather work on that at the end of the season just because they don't want to take the hit in other categories, which I totally get. But here's the thing: if you're gonna end up needing to stream them to jump up a category point or two in September, like you might as well start doing that now, so that you also know what categories that other categories you might also need to chip away at later on in the season. And especially if you've got an open spot and you really just there's nobody that you like on the wire to actually perform or play. These guys, even if they don't play every game of the week, they have a high chance of giving you what you actually need. And that is a stolen base, maybe a run or two. And if they're not playing every day, on the other end, they can't hurt your ratios. They can't hurt your batting average as much. I mean, you can always pick up a Roman Quinn and know that you're going to get a couple stolen bases, but it's going to come at the cost of everything else. Most of these guys that I am talking about aren't going to hurt you everywhere else, especially like a Michael Taylor, who is going to give you added stats in other areas as well. And Nico Horner, the way he's been playing, obviously. All right, we'll move on to our last hitting category, our opportunity guys. These are guys who have really good matchups coming up. They've walked into a lot of playing time. They have some positional flexibility, like the aforementioned John Birdie. Kevin, you added somebody here last second, so I'm going to give you the floor. Who are you looking at in this category?
Yeah, this is the guy that last week we took him out last second, and this week I'm putting him back in last second. It has all to do with playing time. Brad Miller. Toby brought him up last week because we had put him on the list, and I'd put him on there. I'm checking to see if he's getting in these games. And as we were recording on Saturday night, he hadn't played. Well, he was not in the starting lineup tonight, but he was in four of the last five starting lineups, and the Phillies have a seven-game week. And Brad Miller is one of those guys that can hit two home runs in a game or three or four in a week. And with a decent batting average and really a solid four category production, he just doesn't have position with the Phillies. He was great for me in many leagues last year when he started playing every day consistently for St. Louis. It will take an injury for that to happen in Philadelphia, but this past week, he got a lot of playing time. So with a seven game week for them next week, I would expect four or five starts. And that's enough for a guy like Brad Miller.
Yeah, again, playing time is key in a lot of different situations, especially in deeper formats, 15 teamers and beyond. So it's a good call out there as well. Mika, you have your eye on anybody, any other hitters, any random hitters that you think might be walking into extra playing time? Or do they just have really good matchups, maybe a platoon situation where they're facing opposite-handed pitchers, et cetera, et cetera?
In general, I'm intrigued by Monte Harrison of the Marlins just because he's young. He hasn't had much MLB experience at all, and they want to get him going eventually. He has major raw tools. super, he's super fast, real, like real good natural pop. Like he has real tools that could come together, could make him a real fancy asset in time. There's something there. And if he gets the playing time over Lewis Brinson, which I don't know what will happen, but if he does, I think he could be somebody who could get for a dollar, maybe $5, and he could help you out.
I like that spec bid only because I have Harrison at least in one draft and hold. And we were talking about that off air beforehand. As soon as I saw the announcement on Friday that he was called up, I got my phone out of my pocket. I dove right in and threw him into my lineup in that draft and hold only because that draft and hold is hurting for playing time. And I had Michael Chavis in that spot on a whim that maybe Boston called him back up for a spot start in their outfield. But when Terrison got called, I'm like, nope, you get the spot. He hasn't started yet, but since getting called up, but he did, he scored a run. He pinched it at least once in one game so far since being called up. So got something out of that. Better than taking a zero. But I agree. I think that there's a lot of potential in that as long as when he is in the lineup, he's not striking out every other time. As long as he's been working on that at the alternate site, the sky could be limited. Plus, the guy is just ginormous. He should just be scaring every single person he comes in touch with, contact with, just because the man is huge. All right, we'll move on to our pitchers then. We've got a couple of guys here we want to talk about. Kevin, I'll let you take the lead on this one. Probably the most obvious one that's going to go for a decent chunk of change this week and is available pretty much everywhere. I want you to take the lead on that one.
Yeah, Shane McClanahan, anybody that saw even highlights or got to watch part of that game the other day saw how nasty he was. He got 59 pitches in 4 innings, did give up a couple of runs, no walks, which was awesome with the nasty stuff he was showing, 5 strikeouts in the 4 innings. He's going to be picked up in every league this weekend and probably, as you said, for a pretty high amount. It's Tampa. So, yeah, I would love to have him on my roster. One of these guys, we say this multiple times every week, I'm bidding on him. He's not going to be on my roster next week either, however. But just the limited innings is what keeps me away. This is a guy that I probably would break out of my conservative mode for this part of the season if he was with another team. But I don't see Tampa letting him increase his pitch count very rapidly and probably see teams a third time through the order, tempering expectations. But when he does pitch, man, anybody that saw him the other day, that was fun to watch.
Minka, he's available in every single TGFBI league. He is only rostered in 15% of Yahoo. So it means he is available in your TGFBI league. Is this somebody that you'll be shelling out cash or are you in the same mindset as Kevin?
I might be one of those guys that puts in a big bid for him just to see what happens. As Kevin said, stuff is nasty. He's fun to watch. We don't know how deep he'll go. But as long as it's not like a quality start league where he has to go 6 innings, if he goes 5 innings, gets maybe some run support, gets a win, he could be helping your team this week in somewhat favorable matchups. So, yeah, I think I'm going after him this week.
See, I'll be interested in more if I learn that, one, he's either going to get an opener to start him off, because it's Tampa, and that definitely is an option. Or if he starts piggybacking with Luis Patino. And so if those guys are going back and forth, or where one guy starts 1 week and the other guy comes in as a follower, they both go 3 to 4 innings, take up most of the game. That makes obviously both of those guys both more enticing and less enticing at the same time, depending on which order that they come into the game at. There's no guarantee that's going to happen, but I think that's definitely an option that Tampa could be playing around with moving forward with those two guys, as long as they both stay on the major league roster and send one of them back down. And I think they definitely shaved off enough time on McClanahan to skip the extra year of control. And Patino might need to miss some time later on in the year to get that extra year, because he did spend some time in the majors last season as well. Anybody else, Kevin, anybody else that we're looking at for wins and K's in the starting position, starting pitcher category?
Yeah, there's a couple other guys I like. J.A. Happ has looked pretty good recently. One thing to remember is 3 of the 4 starts have been against Detroit, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland. But 2 starts this week at home against Texas and at Detroit. Two favorable matchups. So I do J.A. Happ this coming week. He's owned in 15-teamers, or rostered in 15-teamers, excuse me. But he's available in almost 80% of Yahoo leagues. And then Carlos Martinez in St. Louis is really intriguing to me. And he's only rostered in 54% of TGFBI leagues. I kind of like him this week, especially getting Colorado at home. Getting the Mets, you never know what you're going to get from the Mets. I should have looked. Hopefully DeGrom is pitching the day he's pitching. Then the Mets won't even get anybody on base. The great thing about St. Louis is a nice pitcher's park for the most part. But when it gets hot and humid in the summer, the ball can fly out of there. I took a look at the forecast. It's supposed to be mid-60s for the high all week long in St. Louis. I like Carlos Martinez for those two starts.
And the Mets have not really looked particularly good for the last few days at the very least. And to echo what you said, you always like to see Colorado coming into your home park and facing off against them when they're on the road, as Nick Paulus coined, that rocky road, sweet, sweet rocky road. And you love to see that with your pitchers, getting them in their home parks rather than obviously in Colorado. Good call out to there. Two star pitchers, maybe worth thinking. Like we talked about J.A. Happ last week, actually, as we were looking ahead. Yeah, the only really downside with Happ is that he is rostered across 15 teamers, so still widely available in 12 teamers, as you mentioned. One guy I want to mention before Mika, I get your take on who you might be looking at, is an interesting drop, at least in TGFBI. In two leagues, Robbie Ray was dropped last week and is now available. And it was interesting that he was stashed for so long by the Robbie Ray believers, which I'm a proud club carrying member, a card carrying member of that club myself. And then as soon as he has this best start of probably the last year and a half, he was then dropped, just to see him do go another 6+ innings in his last start on Friday, looking pretty good. Is there no walks again for him? So, you know, is Robbie Ray, Mika's Robbie Ray, are you a card carrying member of the Robbie Ray fan club, or are you I need to see probably 10 starts before I start believing that he's actually made an adjustment worth looking into.
25 starts. I need to see the full. Okay. No, I dug into his last start and he was really pounding the strike zone. So I'm like, maybe they did help him adjust his arming, his release point or something like that, and help him throw strikes now. Maybe there's something there. Two straight starts without walking a guy. So I'm on the outside end looking at the club saying maybe I should enter, maybe not. So we'll see what happens in the future.
All right. So you're probably not, if you're in one of those leagues, you're probably not throwing a bid over on Robbie Ray. That'll probably take him onto your roster then, I take it.
Unless I really need starting pitching. If I really need pitching, I'm like, all right, the upside's nice. But if I just want to take just for the fun of it, yeah, I'm not going to throw something big out there.
I'll be curious to see what he ends up going for in those two leagues, just based on the fact that his last two starts were so good, or at least, and especially this last one leading up into bidding. Is there any other pitcher on the market or on the general market, Mika, that you might have your eye on for this coming week?
Alex Wood is only 89% owned in TGFBI leagues, I believe. So I think he has some nice starts this week, and he's been looking good. He's healthy. His arm angle is still worrisome. Just the way he throws is like kind of scary. He can get hurt any start, it feels like, but as long as he's healthy, he could provide some nice value for you.
Yeah, Alex Wood looks like he is slated to go two starts next week, the week of May 10th and May 16th. Gets really good matchups, like you said. If that holds up, he should get Texas at home in San Francisco, which is, you know, always nice. And then at Pittsburgh, also very nice. So that's a nice little pocket. He is slated to go in Colorado this week, however. So it might be a nice little situation where that maybe the Colorado start scares away some bettors and you can get them a lot cheaper and you can just stash them on your bench, hoping that he holds up to that two-start schedule for the following week, which is obviously very tempting. And the way he's been pitching, like you mentioned, he definitely has some upside there. Good call out there. What we'll do is we'll segue our way across a couple notes on here, go right down to that section where we talk about two starters, upcoming two starters. So what I like you guys to do is I went through and made a list of guys that are currently slotted to go two starts the week of May 10th through May 16th. So it's not this coming week, but the week ahead, trying to be ahead of the game. And I know a lot of managers do this already, but it is, if you go back, you can see guys going for at least right around half of what they're going for in Fab if you get them the week prior to their two starter. So you can actually save a lot of coin, even if you have to stash them for a week because you don't like their matchup like Alex would. So Mika, as you go through my list, is there any, give me two of these guys at least that kind of stand out to you as the ones that you would be targeting the most, keeping in mind what their rostership might look like in a 12-teamer versus a 15-teamer as well.
Yeah, JD Brubaker, I've been a fan of him for just this offseason. I dug him into a little bit. I saw that he started increasing his slider usage, and I'm like, all right, this is a guy that could be solid. I'm pretty sure in 15-teamers, he's probably owned almost everywhere, but in a 12-teamer, if you see him out there, he faces the Reds, and he faces the Giants in the two-star weeks. That's a nice run of starts right there. If you need starting pitching, I wouldn't be afraid to go grab him.
I like the Brubaker call out. We talked about him with Shelly Verstrate a couple weeks ago. I picked him up in my dynasty league. He was still available on the wire. And so I've just been running him out here, him for every start so far. Mm-hmm. For the most part, he's not disappointed. He didn't have that great of a start yesterday, but or Friday. But yeah, to your point, that versus Cincinnati, not in Cincinnati, plus facing off against San Francisco, who's actually pitching really well right now, hitting really well right now. Still not two teams that I'm like overly scared of, especially on my home turf in Pittsburgh. That's a good call, especially in 12 teamers. Anybody else stand out that you think might be more available in, say, like a 15 teamer?
I think that has to go to Logan Webb. He had that great start the other day before his last start, where he allowed three runs, but his other start, he went seven innings pitch, allowed zero runs. And he hasn't really, I don't think he's had one start this season where he's blown up. He's always been at like that three run ceiling. So, I mean, he has some upside to not destroy your ERA, not destroy your ratios, and give you some Ks and some innings. And he's probably not that much universally owned. So if you see him out there, I wouldn't be afraid to go get him.
Yeah, and of course, Logan Webb has the same schedule as Alex Wood. They, you know, are back to back in that rotation. So if you have to stash him and keep him out of Colorado this week, you probably want to do that. But of course, going versus Texas and traveling to Pittsburgh is pretty tempting. Kevin, what I want your help with on this list is I want you to give me who everybody should be avoiding so they're not Austin Gombert again for this week. What name on the list here do you think people are going to be a little too tempted at, and you're going to see a lot of ads either this week ahead of time or week or, you know, next Fab period that they really shouldn't be excited about?
I don't know that a lot of people are going to be really in on many of these guys a week ahead. Some there's a lot of savvy fantasy players out there that grab these guys a couple weeks ahead of time. Most of these, I don't think, will be on their radar, especially after the Austin Gomber, who, however, is in line for a win right now as we speak. Still pitching for the Rockies, only giving up one earned run through five innings, and they do have the lead. So he is easing the blow a little bit for those that put him out there for two starts this week.
He had to, especially in NFBC, you didn't have a choice. So all you could do is sit back and cross your fingers that he had a start like today.
Absolutely. I had the same thing happen earlier in the year, not as bad, but with Brett Anderson, who we talked about for a couple of episodes. And the first start of the week was not great, but, and that's an understatement, but performed well and got a win in the second one. It does ease the blow a little bit. I think it's all about the matchups, and like you hit the nail on the head with San Francisco having a better lineup than people think. I can see people taking Jordan Lyles thinking that, oh, he gets to pitch at San Francisco. That's what we thought about Gomber. And then at the Astros, who've been underperforming a lot of games recently. So I could see people taking that chance. I wouldn't be in there. And
Yeah, and San Francisco, of course, they're known to be hitting lefties really well. And I think that was a big part of why Gomber got hit around a little bit more. Lyles being a righty might have a more of an advantage, but overall, San Francisco's really just doing a really good job of their crusty vets are doing a really good job of putting the ball in play and just playing good baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd be careful of those types of narratives that aren't necessarily true anymore. Arihara is in the same boat. So those are the guys I'd be careful of. A couple of these guys I like for the same reason. And it may just be that not necessarily narratives, but I think they're performing better than people realize. And the matchups may not matter as much. I know he walked five guys the other day, but John Gant has looked really good to me. And so that at Milwaukee, at San Diego would typically scare me away if I was just looking at a two-start streamer. But that's not the way I'm looking at John Gant. I've been looking at adding him to rosters with the intent of keeping him on my rosters. So just be careful with the narratives is what I'm thinking here.
Yeah, that's good advice. That's good advice there. Any other names stick out to you on this list, Mika, worth talking about? Or are you with the fact that there's nobody on here that kind of is worth, you know, spending your fab on?
Mad Bum is interesting. His velocity is back up to 2019 levels. And I feel like as long as his velocity is up around 92 miles per hour, at 89, 90 miles per hour, he can be effective with his cutter and his curveball. If he's available and you need, he gets Miami, he gets Washington, I don't really care about the matchups. If he's pitching, we'll probably do well.
Yeah, we talked about this in the offseason, actually. Our whole plan with Madison Bumgarner was to draft him, stash him for the first four starts where he had a terrible schedule, and then play him for the following four starts, which he lined up to be very favorable in his case, especially if his velocity did come back up. And lo and behold, it is, and he's got some great matchups. Like you said, he's got Miami back-to-back. He should get Miami in Miami this week and then host them next week to start his two-start week. And then his teammate Luke Weaver has the same schedule. Luke Weaver looked really good earlier in the season, but then crash and burn the last couple starts. But those matchups are tempting, especially facing off against Miami and then hosting Miami back in Arizona again. I think Luke Weaver might be that trap that I was mentioning earlier. But if he can show something a little bit more in his first start against Miami, I think that he's worth throwing out a single dollar bid this week, stashing him and seeing if he shows you a little bit more. But and if he doesn't, then you're not going to start him for that two-starter week. You just drop him anyway. It doesn't really hurt you if you've got that roster flexibility, which I know most people do not at this point in the season. All right, so stick with pitchers. Any other guys out there that might be able to chip away at your ratios? Mika, I'll start with you. Are there any other, maybe it might be long relievers that can chip away, just a new hot hand, a new guy on the block, if you will, that kid have a good start coming up that you're not worried about the strikeouts. He might not get a win. He might not even go the full five to qualify for a decision. Is there any guy out there that you've seen worth keeping an eye out for ratio chipper?
I keep my eye on Chris Flexen. He came back from the KBO this season and he has some up and down starts. His last start didn't go as well, but he has good command of his pitches. He's not a terrible pitcher. He has a fluid delivery. It's going to be really repeatable. He's going to solid, you know, consistent release points. He's an experienced guy. He's like a veteran. At this point, he knows what it takes to win at this level. And he is 51% owned in TGFBI leagues. If you need just somebody to just help for your ratios for free, for cheap, I like Chris Flexen.
It's a good call. Yeah, he faces Baltimore, or he's slated to face Baltimore on Wednesday, which if he was with any other team besides the Mariners, might line him up for a two-start week the following week as well. But as the Mariners continue to look like they're going to continue with their six-man rotation, as we mentioned last week, he probably won't see that two-starter or ever with Seattle. You like to see the Baltimore matchup for sure this coming week. It's a good call out. I always keep my eye on the long relievers that I know are going to put up multiple innings. I know, Kevin, you mentioned this all the time, but Garrett Whitlock, where he's still available, he's putting up at least two innings in every appearance. Hasn't been appearing in as many games as I would like, but The fact is that even going 2 or 2 1/3, he's still putting up 3 to 5 strikeouts in every outing, and he's not letting up any earned runs. He's still got, I think, a 0.6 whip on the season. And this is a guy that he might not play for me every week. He might sit on my bench some weeks, but when he's got a lot of really tasty matchups in a week, he might get thrown in there in lieu of a 2-starter pitcher who might hurt a lot of my ratios as well. So Garrett Whitlock of the Red Sox, there's always a good chance. There's always a chance, at least, that he does continue to be stretched out and gets a spot start for the Red Sox in the coming weeks or months throughout the season. And where they use him, he'll be in a spot where he can vulture a couple of wins for you as well. So somebody to keep an eye on. Anybody else fit this category for you, Kevin?
Yeah, I was looking at a couple of Kyles for this today. They don't necessarily go multiple innings, but they have been used often. Kyle Finnegan in Washington had his 12th appearance today, and he's averaging over a strikeout an inning, so he's getting into 3 or 4 games a week. That adds up. Also, he's used in every type of situation. So if the game is tied or they're down a run or two, that increases the probability for a win. Kyle Zimmer in Kansas City, same way. He's used very often, especially if they're down a run or two. And so that just increases. He's already got 2 wins that way this season. So a couple of guys that if you're short on starters, you can throw one of these guys in there as your 6th or 7th guy.
And then we'll move on to everybody's favorite category. And that's, of course, that is saves. So I have a couple questions for you guys in this category. First and foremost, just want to mention that a couple of interesting drops I saw in NFBC 15 teamers last week. Josh Stama was dropped in 2 TGFBI leagues last week. And then Seven Crichton was dropped in 2 main event leagues last week before picking up. You know, Crichton went multiple, like a whole week between appearances. So I get why he was dropped, but it does seem like he is the guy in Arizona. Obviously, Stama made a name for himself this week, but it was interesting to see him being dropped by multiple teams the pretty much the day after he got a save in Kansas City and getting picked up by so many other teams. Are these guys, if they were dropped in your leagues, and I'm going to guess it was Kevin's league because he seems like everybody has dropped in Kevin's TGFBI league. Mike, I'll start with you then. Are you looking at either one of these guys if they are available to bolster your bullpen in your leagues?
Definitely a Josh Stama. He has monster stuff, like 101 mile per hour fastball, nice curves. He's definitely a guy I want. Crichton, he doesn't have as good stuff, but if he has the opportunity, I'd see him as one ranking or one tier below Stama here, but I'd still want him if I'm desperate for saves.
So the question I have for you, Kevin, curious to see, Corey Knebel is getting some save opportunities with LA. Now that he is gone, do you see Blake Treinen or anybody else filling that void, or do you think that they're going to put a little bit more pressure on Kenley Jansen?
I think Treinen is going to get a save here and there. And the great thing about him is he's usable when he's not getting saves. He will strike a guy or two out each appearance typically. So he's usable. I have teams like where I'm throwing guys like this out there. I have leagues where I'm still starting Nick Wittgren each week. I'm desperate for saves in several leagues. So a guy like Treinen can be a benefit. You're probably not going to get more than a save in a week. If you do get one that week, that's typically going to be giving Jansen a break, I believe. But if the Dodgers go on a nice win streak and they're close games, he can get one or two. And yeah, Treinen, I think, is the guy. The problem with the Dodgers is it's a good problem for them to have, as we're seeing today. Their depth isn't so deep all of a sudden. So I think in those situations, Treinen will be the guy.
I'd be interested to see where he's available if Treinen goes for the same kind of fab dollars that Knebel was going for when he was picked up in mass 2 or 3 weeks ago. Mika, Chris Martin may return back to Atlanta's bullpen this week. He was doing some rehab starts at the alternate site. Not starts, but just appearances. Do you have any interest there in speccing Chris Martin getting save opportunities in Atlanta, or do you think that Will Smith has a really strong hold on that role in Atlanta?
I do think Will Smith has a strong hold on the role. I think Chris Martin might get some holds. He'll be in that eighth inning, high leverage type situation type role, but I don't think he'll take saves away from Will Smith immediately. But if Will Smith does start underperforming or performing poorly, I do think Martin will be next up.
All right. I think that if anybody out there feels strongly about Martin's role, or at least the Atlanta bullpen, this is your kind of a last chance to give a spec bid in on Martin before he does come back and shows what he's got. So throw in those, you know, single bids now so you can get them, stash them, and see what he's got if you've got the room. You guys have any other bullpens you're keeping an eye on going into this fab period or beyond that are worth talking about?
I would say I keep my eye on the Orioles bullpen with Cesar Valdez out here, you know, just doing his thing, but he keeps getting saves. I feel like they'll just keep running him out there until he stops. He doesn't have, he's a change-up guy, but I don't know how he's doing it. But I guess until he stops, you just got to keep riding him out. If you want to stash, I guess, the next guy up, I guess you can take a flyer on guy like Tanner Scott and see what happens. But yeah.
After everybody spent all that money on Tanner Scott in week one, he's been quietly dropped in most of those leagues since. So he's probably definitely available. Valdez did blow a save on Thursday, but he came back out on Friday and got a save the very next chance he had. He's definitely entrenched in the role in Baltimore for the time being, for sure. All right, then we will move on to our last category, our wild card category. Kevin, do you have anybody, just throwing it out there, that they could fit into any of these categories that is worth keeping an eye on, maybe putting out a spec bid, or just you have any extra interest in?
I think we've talked about it a couple of times tonight, the situation in Arizona. And 3 weeks ago, Josh Rojas was added everywhere. He didn't perform over the past few games. He's performed better. He dropped down in the lineup, no longer leading off. But the problem is, as we talked earlier in the show, they have other guys coming back. So I don't know how that is going to affect his playing time. Hopefully for him, the pickup in performance helps keep him in the lineup just a little lower than he was earlier in the year. But for all the reasons everybody was adding him earlier, he still has that speed. He still does have some power. And if he's going to play, he's available in over half of TGFBI leagues now. And I believe he was universally owned at one point. So he's a guy I would take a shot on if he's available.
A good call out there as well. As always, if there's a player you guys want us to talk about in a bidding, you want us to discuss, let us know. You can email us at onthewirepod@gmail.com. You can shoot us a DM on Twitter @onthewirepod, or by joining the PL Plus over at pitcherlist.com, where you get access to the Pitcherlist Discord and the advice of banter of over 800 members, including all, you know, us. In the Discord, we did get one good question that Mika, I wanted to pick your brain on as well. And so we want to shoot that out to all of our listeners and see what we got here. So here's the question. In my league, I have 3 IL spots. So it's obviously not NFBC format. There's 8 bench spots, and they're working with a $100 fab budget. You cannot use $0 bids. So it's a weekly league. If this player has 3 IL eligible players for their IL spots and 5 other bench players, so there's 3 extra kind of spots left, should I feel the need to fill my other 3 bench spots with speculating players, or should I budget my fab and not bid on players I don't need? It goes into what Kevin alluded to a little bit earlier and having a plan for your players. So in your opinion, if you were in that situation, how would you use those 3 bench spots for more of a speculating or for players that you can get an immediate need out of?
I definitely fill those bench spots. I'm just not the type owner to just have spots open that could have a guy in there that could be useful, even if I'm not starting him. Yeah, I even if I have to put like a dollar bid in on some prospect that could get caught up or some guy, I want to have somebody in those last 3 bench spots. I don't like wasting space.
Sure. So you'd be rather have So I guess the question though is, would you rather fill them with those prospects that you might, that might get called up and might make a bigger impact? Or would you rather fill those spots with, say, an extra bench bat? It's a weekly league, so obviously you can't go in and out of your roster spots on a daily basis. But like in case of an injury, a guy who's playing every day, or like just a pure depth or pure speculative upside?
Yeah, I think it'd just be the type of upside things. Unless they're you know, IL players that are going to be on the IL for a long time. If they're going to come back maybe within a couple weeks, just give me the upside guy for now, and maybe it'll work out.
All right, Kevin, do you have any other extra insight? I like that last point you made, Mika, about just knowing how long that those players might be on the IL, because you're going to have to drop somebody to bring them back as well. Kevin, do you have any other insight into this question?
Yeah, and that's a big part of it. And I think the reason that I did answer it just a little bit differently in the Discord, for the most part, I agree with Micah. However, I don't think you stated this, but it was $100 fab league. That makes it a little different for me because there's no $0 bids and $100. So he's spending a dollar or two to pick these players up. If it is only for a week or two, then I'm saving that money, because if that was a $1,000 fab league, that's equivalent to $10 or $20. But in a $1,000 fab league, yeah, I'm spending a dollar or two to fill the spots. So I think there is a difference to distinguish between the amount of fab you have in the league.
Cool. Good advice there. Thanks a lot, guys. All right. And then we will leave Kevin, your parting words for our listeners, overall advice you might have going into this fab period that everybody should be heeding to.
Yeah, I this is going to be tough, I think, for some people. I picked up Austin Gomber in a league, and it's not going to deter me from continuing to stream pitchers when I think they have good matchups. I had Lucas Giolito when he gave up 8 runs and 1 1/3 a couple of weeks ago as well. That hurt just as bad. I'm not benching Lucas Giolito the rest of the season. I'm not going to stop picking up 2-start pitchers if they have good matchups, and if I think they can succeed in those matchups, they say you can't chase wins, but we are. And especially in today's baseball, when it's more and more uncommon for a pitcher to even throw 5 innings and qualify for a win, we're chasing them whether we like it or not. And 2 starts, a pitcher that doesn't average a strikeout an inning can get you 10, 11, 12 strikeouts in a week. So I'm going to continue to do it when I like the matchups. I'm not letting Austin Gomber scare me away.
That's good advice. Don't be scared by past performance. As simple as that. No, that's really good. All right. I want to once again thank Mika Henry for joining us for this episode. Mika, could you remind all of our listeners where they can listen to you, read your work, and what you might be working on that they should be keeping a lookout for?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Fantasy Central 1, that's the number 1. I write for Fantrax for newleftfantasy.com and rotorinks.com. And I'm the co-host of the Fantasy Insider podcast that will be resuming episodes soon, hopefully. We're hoping so. But yeah, and for Fantrax, I have this, I guess you can say, player trend series coming up, starting very soon, actually. I think a few days. It's just going to be like just going in depth and highlighting different player trends that we've seen throughout the season and just keeping track of those.
It's awesome. So ever make sure.
I love the Micah notes, man.
Oh yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Following you on Twitter alone is enough content for pretty much anything that any of us put out. Definitely be following him over at Fantasy Central 1. Like I said, it's a number 1. We'll have a link to that and everything else in the show notes as well. So you can just click on that. Make sure you give him a follow and his podcast and everything else that he does. So Mika, thank you so much for coming out tonight and joining us. It's been a blast, and love the opportunity to pick your brain. And I also like feeling incredibly inadequate as I'm sitting with the number 1 and number 2 overall winners of TGFBI in the same podcast, where I just sit at lonesome 52 overall. So thanks for that. I appreciate it. That's going to do it for us this week's On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen and leave a rating review is always appreciated. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. And you can follow Kevin at Hasting Kevin. keep an eye out for Kevin's weekly Fab Preview article that goes along with this podcast. It comes out every Sunday afternoon, as well as my Fab Review article that called Waiver Watcher every Tuesday. They both can be found at pitcherlist.com and by following at pitcherlist on the Twitter. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we are a proud member of the Pitcherlist Podcast Network, along with 20 other incredible podcasts. Make sure to follow at Pitcherlist Pods on Twitter to get updates about every new episode that drops from each of them and give them all a listen. We wish you the best of luck in all of your leagues and hope you win all of your bids by exactly $1. Thanks once again to Mika for joining us. And for Kevin Hastings, I am Adam Howe. With that, we bid you goodbye.